And welcome to Wine with Wilson, the podcast which talks about everyone's favourite beverage, wine. We've been engaging over the last few weeks in podcasts about ancient wines and about wine in the ancient world. And I promised that this episode was going to be a deep dive into a kind of wine which I think is particularly special. It's one of the wines from Greece. It's probably the wine that defines Greek wine, and that's a wine called Assyrtiko. Assyrtiko is a white grape. It's a grape that comes specifically from the island of Santorini. It's actually quite difficult to get here in New Zealand. There are some people who are importing it and selling it, but it is incredibly special. So, Wines with Wilson this week is going to be looking at Assyrtiko. So, what makes Assyrtiko so special as a grape and as a wine? People describe Assyrtiko as having a vibrant acidity. And I think, for you and I, that means that there's a lot of acid in there. This is a bright, shiny wine. The other thing that's very distinctive about Assyrtiko, and one of the things that might actually sound quite weird, is that it almost always has a flavour of saltiness. Just a slight saltiness at the back, not like drinking wine that had been mixed with seawater, if any of you remember our previous episodes about the way that the ancient Greeks quite liked to mix their wine. More that there's a memory of salt there. Now, if those grapes were growing on Santorini, and we'll talk some more about the island of Santorini shortly, that can be because there actually quite literally has been salt on the grapes when they have gone into the press. But it does seem that it's a characteristic of the grape more generally. And it's a grape which really picks up on the minerality in the soil. Now, there are people who will tell you that you can't taste minerals. And I think that there's absolute scientific truth in that. But there are some grapes that when you vinify them, when you turn them into wine, there is definitely that flavour as if you were licking a wet stone. Perhaps not sort of something you do very often, but if you can imagine that flavour, that's the kind of flavour we're talking about when we talk about minerality. And it's something that Assyrtiko has in huge quantities. As well as that, it's often got very high alcohol, which may or may not be a good thing, but it's certainly a characteristic of the wine. So these are incredibly dry, acid-driven wines, beautiful, as you can imagine, with seafood that come quite specifically from the island of Santorini. Now, Santorini is that picture postcard island. It's the one that you can sort of imagine if people say, ooh, holiday on a Greek island. The Instagrammable photos, the beautiful caldera, the huge harbour with these mountainous sort of hillsides leading down to it, covered in white buildings, beautiful whitewashed buildings, usually with blue roofs and blue shutters. You've all seen it on Instagram. In fact, reach for your phone right now and Google it. Those pictures of the sunset over Santorini are what have sent, thousands of backpackers over the years on their trip to Greece. And it is a particularly beautiful island, not one that I've ever had the good fortune of visiting. If there's anybody out there who'd like to fund a Wines with Wilson special tour of Santorini, I'd be very pleased to hear from you. Santorini is also known for its wind. So as you can imagine, it's an island in the middle of the ocean. There's a lot of wind. There are hillsides, and that's where the grapes grow. And damage from wind has been one of the serious problems over the hundreds, probably thousands of years that grapes have been growing there. So the people on Santorini, the wine growers on Santorini, have a very particular solution to this problem. The grapes on Santorini grow on vines that have been plaited into two quite distinct different shapes. One's called a calora, and it's like a little basket, and the other one is called a cladeftiko, which is more like a sort of a small ring made from the vines. If you were in the studio with me right now during this podcast, you'd see me trying to make these shapes with my hands. As you're just listening to me, what you've got to imagine is grapevine being woven together into a small basket about 40 or 50 centimetres across, maybe a little bigger, maybe a little smaller. And the grapes trained so that what they do is they grow into the inside of the basket. So the outside of the basket, the actual grapevine, protects the bunches of grapes from the ravages of the sea winds of Santorini. So, of course, what this is going to mean for our grapes is that you can't pick them with a machine. Every single grape on Santorini has to be very carefully handpicked by people who are bending over in order to reach into these baskets and choose the ripe grapes to be taken and turned into beautiful Assyrtiko wine. Now, I think this is a good moment for us to actually stop and say a little bit more about Santorini and how it fits in to that sort of history of classical Athens and the place of wine in the ancient world. You might remember from a previous episode that when we talked a lot about Athens, about that most well-known city from classical Greece, from Greece between 500 and 400 BCE, that we talked about moderation, about the idea that everything should be done in moderation, the idea from Apollo and from his temple in Delphi. And we talked about the fact that this idea of moderation rules the way that those ancient Athenians saw themselves. Being too excessive, being too over the top, being too extreme was always seen as being something that was going to be dangerous, difficult, and cause problems. So, a little past the classical period, just at the very end of it, we have the great philosopher Plato. And Plato writes a whole series of dialogues, and they're usually dialogues involving a discussion between a range of different philosophers, and in particular, his teacher, Socrates. So when we think about Greek philosophers, we think about this character, Socrates, and we sort of feel as if we know him because these dialogues are in his voice. It's him speaking to other philosophers. But of course, what we're really reading are sort of works almost of philosophical fiction, constructions of Plato. And Socrates himself is a kind of a construction of his student, Plato. Was there a historical figure? Yes, of course there was. Is what he says in Plato's dialogues what he as a man actually thought? Well, that's up for debate and discussion because Plato is using him as a kind of device to tell the stories that he wants to tell and teach people in Greece the things that he wants to teach them. So we have a whole range of dialogues by Plato using his mentor, his teacher, Socrates, as the mouthpiece for a whole lot of philosophical ideas. And there's two of these that mention a very interesting place, a place that it's kind of come to capture, I guess, the imagination of people right across the planet. And that's the idea of the lost continent of Atlantis. So Atlantis is supposedly a large city, a city built in concentric rings. So you've got to imagine a sort of a circular island with heading up towards a mountain, a cone, and there being rings and rings and rings of city around that. It was a very beautiful city. It was populated by people who were great artists and great musicians and great poets. But they also had the idea in their heads, at least according to Plato, that they needed to conquer other nations. And to cut a long story, and it is a long story, it's mentioned in two of Plato's dialogues, in the Timaeus and also in the Critias. To cut a long story short, what happens to the people of Atlantis is that they get the idea that they want to conquer the city of Athens. And this is a kind of an imagined Athens, an Athens, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years prior to the time of Plato when he's writing these dialogues. It's an imagined Athens that these imagined Atlanteans wish to invade. In the process of the invasion, they are turned back. The Athenians beat them, despite the fact that they have superior firepower, for want of a better word, superior intelligence, it would seem, according to Plato. They're turned back. They are defeated. Not just are they defeated, but the gods take terrible vengeance on them for their hubris, for their excessive pride, for their attempt to be greater than they are, to act almost as gods in the world. And what the gods do to the Atlanteans is they completely destroy their city. They explode it and it sinks beneath the sea. And so, of course, people since they first read this story have been looking to see whether or not there's any grain of truth in it, whether or not a real Atlantis did exist, because the story is so compelling, the story of a great city, a great nation of people who through their own sort of pride destroy themselves. Now, this story probably does come from something historical, and there have been lots of suggestions about what that might be. But the idea that I want to put in front of you today, and it certainly has some merit, is that the whole sort of myth of Atlantis, the story of Atlantis that Plato tells, may well be a memory of what happened to the island of Thera, the island that is the modern Santorini. So in about 1600 BCE, so that's a very long time ago, in about 1600 BCE there was a catastrophic eruption on the island of Thera. Thera had been a sort of a reasonably round-shaped island. It had been quite heavily populated. In 1600, the middle of it, which was one giant volcano, blows out. It is so catastrophic that it was probably heard for, you know, hundreds of, if not further, miles around. It had an impact on pretty much the entire globe in terms of weather. There are reports from China from the time of a sort of a yellowish fog in the air that lasts for a very long time. So this is an absolutely catastrophic event. When you visit the modern Santorini, what you have is an island which is kind of shaped like a misshapen back to front C, because what's left of the island is just really the rim of the volcano, the large mountainous hilly rim of the volcano overlooking this beautiful bay, which is in fact the caldera of the volcano. So I quite like to make that connection between Santorini, the modern Santorini, the ancient Thera, and the myth, the story of Atlantis, because for me, wine in Greece, wine in the ancient world, is always really intimately connected to that mythology and connected to those sort of fighting ideas of nomos and physis, of law and order and chaos, of moderation and rationality and immoderation, and the excitement of the party, of wine, of dancing and of festivities. So the idea that the great island of Santorini, where this beautiful wine Assyrtiko comes from, is part of that whole myth about what happens when you're excessive, I think for me adds something to the experience of drinking those wines. Of course, the other thing that probably the explosion on Thera did in 1600 BCE is it probably brought about the end of the great sort of palace civilizations of the Aegean world, of the Mycenaean and Minoan world. Mycenaean civilization is Bronze Age civilizations on mainland Greece. Minoan civilization is the Bronze Age civilizations on Crete. And the Minoan civilization in particular seems to have been impacted by what happened on Thera. So there probably would have been serious implications for the weather, for harvests, but there was also very likely to have been massive tidal waves, all the kinds of things that are associated with a huge explosion in the middle of the ocean. And from 1600 BCE, those Mycenaean and Minoan civilizations appear to have experienced major stress and, in fact, probable collapse. And there may even be some other sort of historic run-ons from these events. About 300 years later, in the New Kingdom of ancient Egypt, they're attacked by what have been enigmatically called the Sea Peoples. Now, it seems quite likely that these people that have been sort of basically making chaos around the Aegean and the Mediterranean were possibly displaced people, a few hundred years later, still from these destructions of these great civilizations in Greece that were laid low by an explosion. It's one theory. It's a theory I quite like. It works for me. It fits in with my whole narrative about the ancient world. I hope you found it interesting to think about that. But let's move back to Assyrtiko, to the wine itself, to how it's grown, to what it tastes like, to where you might be able to get hold of some of it if you're suitably intrigued. So let's just recap. Assyrtiko is an acid-driven wine, originally grown and native to the island of Santorini, which is a part of Greece. It has vibrant acidity. It has a delicate saltiness. It's very mineral-driven. It's beautiful with seafood. And it does tend to have quite high alcohol. It's grown in these rather strange basket-shaped vine arrangements. It is almost certain that it is an ancient grape, and by ancient I mean quite possibly one that was being drunk during the classical period, during ancient times. That sort of thing is very difficult to demonstrate, but it seems likely. Of course, there's a huge argument about what the wines of ancient Greece would be like, and if you've been listening to previous podcasts, you'd know some of this discussion. But we have this idea, I think, of wine, particularly in the ancient world, of it being from red grapes, and I think that comes from a whole lot of things. If we think about the great poet of the ancient world, of the ancient Greek world, Homer, and one of the lines that sort of people probably know, they probably don't even associate it with Homer, is the idea of the wine dark sea. So Homer uses these epithets, these little phrases that go in front of words in order to create the right kind of rhythm within each line of his poem. And the epithet that most commonly goes with sea is wine dark. And I think he's trying to sort of capture that idea when you look into the ocean, particularly when you're way out at sea, maybe it's a little bit cloudy, you look into the ocean, it's that deep, dark purple-blue colour, bottomless, fathomless, a really quite extraordinary colour, one that I find quite frightening in some ways. And the wine, so the wine dark sea is that sort of description which suggests that when he was looking at the sea, he was reminded of staring into the depths of a wine bowl. So we have this vision that the ancients were drinking just red wine, but I think that is extremely unlikely. There are both red and white native indigenous grapes right throughout Greece, so I see no reason why people wouldn't have been drinking something very like Assyrtiko, maybe even from the island of Santorini at the time. But if we come forward a little bit to more modern times and we think about the island of Santorini and the Assyrtiko that it produces, it has some of the oldest vines quite possibly in the world, as in vines themselves that are probably over 100, maybe even 200 years old. It's certainly got vineyards that have had active vinification for some of the longest periods in Greece and in fact in the world. So this is an ancient wine culture, an ancient series of wines, something that has enormous history. And the very fact that it has this enormous history, I think, is part of what's really important. It's a protected destination of origin, a PDO, and there is a lot of work being done on Santorini to protect the ancient vineyards from development. So just as we were saying at the beginning that Santorini is this place which is very Instagrammable, there is, of course, enormous pressure on the island for more accommodation, for more fancy hotels, for more nice places for people from the rest of Europe to come and visit, enjoy the wines, enjoy the beautiful sunsets, enjoy all the wonderful things about Santorini. But of course, there's no room because it's the rim of a caldera. So the vineyards, the very thing that people should be coming to Santorini to enjoy, have been under enormous pressure to sell their land to hotel corporations. And there has been fears that actually the wine that's made Santorini so special and that really you can only get from that island may have been under threat because of this. Now, there's work being done on that at the moment, which is a very good thing. And the wines of Santorini and the vineyards of Santorini are, for the short term anyway, reasonably safe, and you will be able to enjoy those wines. The very fact that it is a caldera, that it's volcanic, is one of the things that's really important in that minerality that we were talking about earlier in the way that these wines taste. There is something quite special about wine that comes from volcanic soils that has a flavour that you just can't capture anywhere else. So Santorini is where Assyrtiko comes from, but of course it's not the only part of Greece now where it's grown. You can get Assyrtiko from most of the mainland growing areas of Greece, including in the far north past Thessaloniki, in Nemea, in the Peloponnese, and a range of other regions. And those Assyrtikos are still delicious. Definitely things that I buy and drink, but they're not going to have that same salty quality, austere mineral quality that the wines of Santorini have. These really are something that are quite special. They're also wines that if you drink them too young, and I think we're so used in New Zealand drinking white wine young, we drink it, if it's something like a Sauvignon Blanc, often not really that long after it's been picked, fermented and bottled. And we don't have much of a concept of aging white wines. The thing with an Assyrtiko, particularly one from Santorini, is that in its first couple of years of life in the bottle, it can actually be quite an aggressive wine. That acid is so aggressive that it actually needs a little bit of time in the bottle to age, to mellow, to integrate. And these then are wines which are what we would call age-worthy. I think increasingly we're realising that a whole range of white wines, particularly ones that have a lot of acid in them, can age really beautifully. I mean, a lot of people probably already know about ageing Rieslings, and not every Riesling can be aged, but a lot of Rieslings, if you age them, will start to develop what is sometimes referred to as a sort of almost kerosene sort of smell and flavour. Now, that's not nearly as awful as it sounds, and in fact it can add an incredible complexity to the wines. Assyrtiko is one of those wines which has such a strong acid backbone and has such high alcohol that it's definitely something you can experiment with aging. I find that mine don't get the chance to age, that I just want to see them on the table with some lovely seafood. And I really need to do a little bit more experimentation and have a little bit more moderation, yes indeed, and self-discipline in order to age them myself. There's people experimenting in Santorini with using things like wild ferments as well. and producing a sort of slightly funkier style of wine, and also with using some oak to mellow out that really intense acid and create wines with considerable complexity. So there's a whole range of styles available to you if you want to dip into the world of Santorini Assyrtiko. But before you go and dip your feet in, just be prepared that in New Zealand at least, you are unlikely to get a bottle of Assyrtiko from Santorini for under about $40 or $50. And that is a problem, I think, because for most of us, that's an awful lot of money to pay for a bottle of wine. It's particularly a lot of money to pay for a bottle of wine if you don't know that you're definitely going to get quality. I can assure you that in New Zealand, if you are paying that for a bottle of Santorini Assyrtiko, you will be getting something that's going to be an extraordinary drinking experience. But it is a lot of cash to part with. You can definitely pay an awful lot less for wines that come from other parts of Greece and are often just as delicious. They're just going to be delicious in a slightly different way. They're not going to have those same exact characteristics, but they're still going to have that incredible acid drive, that acid backbone, and a beautiful minerality about them. They're going to sort of, I always feel when I open a bottle of Assyrtiko as if I am opening a little bottle of summer. I'm kind of opening a little bottle of Greek sunshine, and that's what I feel like when I pour it into my glass. It's got a very pale colour, but a very light aroma, but just this intense experience in the mouth, which is a little bit like drinking sunshine, and that's certainly how I feel about it. It's not a grape that has been grown particularly much outside of Greece until relatively recently, and there are some experimenting with it in Italy, I think in the US, and there's at least one producer growing it in Australia, Jim Barry, which are much better known for their reds, have grown some Assyrtiko grapes. They've been put out the first few vintages, and it does come in at a price point a little more friendly to the pocket, though still not cheap. And I think it's a pretty nice wine, a pretty interesting wine. It reminds me of Greek Assyrtiko rather than being an exact copy of it. And they're doing some interesting things with that grape. And I think that there's a lot for you out there to try if you want to kind of dip your toes into this incredible wine. The other thing that I think we really need to talk about with Assyrtiko, and particularly Santorini Assyrtiko, is this incredible sweet wine that gets made from it. And it's a very ancient tradition. The wine's called Vinsanto and should not be confused with Italian Vinsanto. It's made from Assyrtiko grapes, though sometimes it's made from a blend of sort of 50 or so percent Assyrtiko and then a range of the other sort of white native grapes to Santorini. The grapes are picked usually overripe, so they're picked when the sugar is really full on in them. Then they're left dry out in the hot sun for over a week or more. They're left to sort of raisin up, and then they're pressed. So what you get is an incredible, intensive, sweet wine that also has the backbone of acid, which is just part of what Assyrtiko is. So it's not a sickly sweet wine. These are usually then aged in oak for quite some time. And once they actually end up in the bottle, they can be, rather than the almost clear colour that you'd expect from an Assyrtiko, these are almost brown. They're like the sort of fortified wines that we expect. But of course, they're not fortified and they're totally naturally sweet. The sweetness comes from the sugars that's developed in these overripe grapes and from the sugars that have developed as they've been sun-dried and allowed to raisin. Now, Vinsanto, again, is not going to be a cheap wine. Most of them will be coming into you at well over $80 a bottle, but my goodness, these are beautiful drinks. These are really special sweet wines, because you have not just the sweetness and the complexity that's come from the process, but because of Assyrtiko's aggressive acid, you've got a cleanness to the wine, so that they're never sickly. They're never like drinking treacle or whatever, though they do have that amazing treacle sort of texture to them. They're really very, very special. I would strongly advise people to get into them. Now, the thing is that as an extremely sweet wine, they also have a real connection back to that ancient world. Because one of the things that we know about the ancient Greeks is that they had a very sweet tooth. And I think we've talked in the past about how the Greeks would often mix honey with their wine in order to make it even sweeter and even more delicious. That was something the Romans rather liked to do as well, a few hundred years later. So Vinsanto is not just an amazing wine from Santorini today, but it's a real reflection of the ancient Greek past and of the tastes of those people from the ancient world. So I hope you've enjoyed our little dive into Assyrtiko. There is an awful lot more to say about this incredible grape and about the amazing vineyards on Santorini where it's being grown. But this is a little taster for you of the Greek grapes and a bit of an introduction to Greek grapes. In our next podcast, we will try and have a look at some of the other regions in Greece and some of the other grapes that are being grown in the modern world and what their connections might be to the ancient world. So you've been listening to Wines with Wilson with me, Carleen Wilson, owner of Wilson Your Wine Butler and the retail website Colt Wine. I hope you've enjoyed our little trip to the Greek islands, certainly what we need at this time of the year. And join us again for Wines with Wilson.